So why does God not stop all the wars? We nibbled at this with the children last Sunday, but let's look at it in more depth. Critics of religion, and there are many, and those who struggle to find faith, and there are many, don't take long to get to this one. Why are there so many wars? Why does God not do something about it? If he's so powerful, why does he not just stop all the wars? Then we would believe in him. Then we would believe in him. It's a huge problem for people. A huge barrier to belief. War and all that goes with it. Why does God let it happen? Why does he not intervene, rend the heavens, come down and just stop it all the stupidity? It's an interesting question. But I'm not sure if it's the right question. Throughout the centuries, thinkers and theologians, philosophers and analysts have tried to make some kind of sense or order out of the dreadful business of the reality of war, make it saner, more purposeful, more sensible, more reasonable. They've cobbled together the philosophical or theological ground rules of what has come to be called the just war. The just war. Things like that it must be started by proper authority, with consensus and legal process before embarking on a military adventure that will draw the nation into the bloody conflict. There has to be sufficient cause, self-defence, to right some terrible wrong, to restore what has been taken unjustly. It should be waged with good intention, the aim of securing a just peace and restoring good relations very much in mind. There's a strong philosophical, ethical commitment to protecting non-combatants, in theory at least. Though in the cynical ways in which modern warfare takes place, that commitment has frayed and crumbled, and there is nowhere to hide. As the people of Bosnia soon found out, and plenty of others since, there are no safe havens. That moral pillar, is broken in pieces in pretty much all of the battles that rage. It's called collateral damage, or some such sophistry. And of course, given the means of mass destruction available to so many combatants these days, not least ourselves, methods and strategies and demonstrations of power should, in a just war context, be proportionate, restricted to those methods of warfare that will achieve the worthwhile aims, rather than vicious and domineering, aiming at total destruction of the enemy. And so some context is given to the business of war, some moral compass provided that will make the horror less horrific and the damage less sweeping. You may recall the national outrage at the way in which Tony Blair disregarded the weight of public opinion prior to the Gulf War, not considered by the millions who marched against it to be a just war. No consensus, insufficient authority, no convincing cause, no safe havens, no post-war strategy. Those reservations expressed gave subsequent politicians pause as they decided to step back from military action in Syria. There was more cautious approach, less of a rush to arms, a sense that as a nation we had seen war and we'd hated what we saw and were profoundly suspicious of any attempt to drag us too readily into conflict. A large sigh of relief was heard when our leaders stepped back from that brink. And yet, of course, we human beings never make it simple for ourselves. The world does not make it easy always to stand aloof when we hear of ethnic cleansing and genocide and chemical weapons used against civilians and whole generations being driven into the desert to eke out an existence in the refugee camps. And now Ukraine, Gaza. What are we to do? Can we stand idly by? And what if we'd done that back when Hitler spewed his hateful ideologies across Europe, enslaving a continent? Sometimes the call comes. There is slaughter to be stopped. There are sacrifices to be made. As Churchill said, some things are worse than war. Slavery is worse than war. That's what today is about, Remembrance Sunday. Gratitude and awe instead of shock and awe. Humility in face of quiet heroism beyond our imagining. A debt not to be forgotten as we live our safe, secure, comfortable lives. Thanks to them. Because of them. Today we remember the heroes and heroines who stood against the evil that was political power unhampered, unchecked by justice, truth or compassion, and saved us, our blessed generation, saved us from horrors beyond telling. So we owe them, we remember them, we owe them, we will not forget. So we soon see it's complicated, and we have to work it out. We human beings, without passing the buck to God, the buck stops here. We can't hide behind the skirts of some looked-for divine benign intervention. Critics would be quick to point out that the very solution we are offering, the way of Christ, the alternative, the truths of the faith, have themselves historically been instruments of war and banners under which countless armies have marched. We are part of the problem, not simply part of the solution. So yes, let the record show, at least on a superficial analysis, the many ancient cruelties and countless slaughters wrought in the name of true religions various. This is undoubtedly a problem. Religion and war, crusades and persecutions in the name of religion. I remember how disturbing was the bizarre sight of the Prophet Muhammad's sword on display in the Topkapi Palace in Istanbul. How incongruous it seemed as a religious relic. For religion and war seem strange bedfellows. Somewhere deep down we feel uncomfortable with those stories and connections. We sense that bloodshed and aggression and conquest by force of arms, bludgeoning our opponents into submission, crushing those who oppose our doctrines. Well, we just know that's not the way of Christ. And if over the ebb and flow of the centuries we've failed to see that, live that, embody that, then that's our failing, not his. We just know it's not his way. And if we dare suggest it is, we betray his love and we mangle his truth. But meanwhile, back at God, what's he supposed to do to stop the madness? Do we really want him to override our freedoms? Our dangerous, wonderful liberty that makes us human and makes us wonderful and makes us terrifying all at once? And what would our reaction be to his interference, were he indeed to rend the heavens and come down and stop everything? Hey God, leave us alone. We thought that was the point of the whole thing. Total responsibility for the world we make. Complete freedom to make of it what we will. Garden or charnel house. Land of opportunity or wasteland. Our choice. Our decisions. Shaping the world. Determining its character. Listen, we write the story, okay? It's what we do, it's who we are, and we have to live with the consequences of our own delinquencies. That's how it works. And we treasure beyond measure that humanity and those liberties, and we do not want our freedom and our status as free men and women, that's our identity, our status as free men and women, to be usurped. Adults in an adult world, so hands off God. We know that's what we would say. How much we would resent our independence being usurped. How little we would appreciate control being taken from us. Even though that means we sometimes run the risk of letting things get out of control. Total freedom. Total responsibility. Real choices for real people in the real world. Ouch. God help us. I saw the original film, All Quiet on the Western Front, many decades ago. Even as a teenager, I was silenced by its emotional power. The new Netflix version was even more shocking, harrowing and humbling. It won many awards, so vivid, realistic and powerful was it. Seen from the side of the German army, it reminded us that on the morning of the 11th of November, 1918, in the hours before the guns fell silent, wait for it, a tragic 10,000 soldiers were killed. 10,000 on the day peace came. I can hardly bear to contemplate the waste and the bitterness of that. If that had been my son, my father, my uncle, my husband. For let's not let our justified desire to honour the fallen, let's not forget in the middle of all that, that war is terrible, wasteful and a sign. A sign that all is not well with our spoiled and damaged humanity, and that it would be better if swords were changed to ploughshares. And we did indeed hang the war trumpet in the hall and studied war no more. How blooming good would that be? And yet there is wickedness out there, we know. And there was a desire to conquer and destroy and impose, and there was a will to crush the human spirit and enslave the soul of a generation, and brave hearts could not stand idly by and let those forces of wickedness dominate, control and corrupt. Could not stand by. Today, our minds and hearts are torn with confusion and sorrow. We honour those who fell, and we remember those who mourned their deaths, and we honour them not just with our words or our silence, but with our resolve to ensure that each new generation learns the meaning and the worth of freedom, the value and the sacredness of each individual, and we determine to build communities that by their compassion and their fairness and their integrity bear some resemblance to the world men and women gave their lives and their hopes and their futures for us to have, for us to enjoy. Anything less would be to dishonour those sacrifices. Anything less would be to dishonour those sacrifices.